and welcome to the Zeitgeist Tapes, a podcast about pop culture and politics. My name's Emma Burnell. I'm a journalist, and I'm here with Professor Steve Fielding. Hello, Steve.
Hello, and hello, listener.
Yes, our lovely one listener, who we like very much, although they haven't yet rated and reviewed the podcast, so we'll be berating them at the end. So this is our Christmas special, cue jingle bells, and we are going to talk about the quintessential Christmas film, It's a Wonderful Life. It's a Frank Capra film from the 1940s?
I think it was released in 1947, yes, or 48.
And it's of its time in certain aspects. There are some interesting attitudes to some of the, particularly to women and some of the stuff about race, but actually there's some very progressive themes running throughout it. But ultimately, it is the ultimate Christmas feel-good movie, isn't it, Steve?
Well, it kind of is and it kind of isn't. I mean, when it first came out in the late 40s, Capra was still considered to be... It was kind of like the Steven Spielberg of his day. He could do what he wanted. And this was the film, I think, that threw this spanner in the works, as far as he was concerned. It was a film that didn't really do that well commercially. Didn't win any awards, which he was quite used to achieving, and it got forgotten. And it's a kind of a really interesting story about how a film can be reclaimed by later generations, because it kind of disappeared. I mean, if people weren't talking about It's a Wonderful Life in the 50s or the 60s, but in the 1970s it was out of copyright, so all these American TV stations were showing it at Christmas because it was free. You know, effectively.
That's why it's free on Amazon, presumably.
I don't really know. I mean, maybe they haven't noticed. So there's a whole generation of Americans, of course it's an American thing, who now, for them, it is the defining Christmas film, but it wasn't for generations immediately after the film being released. But I don't know about you, but although it ends, you know, with everyone's around the Christmas tree, family, everybody's loving each other. It's like a lot of Capra films. It's a comedy, but it's a very dark comedy.
Yeah. Oh, it's bleak as hell. I mean, you have to go through absolute fires or snows of torture in order to get to the happy ending.
Yes.
There's a quite incredible Friends episode where Phoebe has not been shown the ends of various films that end very sadly. So, for example, she thinks Old Yeller is a lovely story about a family dog. and then Monica tries to cheer her up by showing her It's a Wonderful Life.
Mm.
And she stops before the end. And she's like, this is a horrible film. This is a terrible film about a horrible man whose life just gets worse and worse and worse and worse.
So I think maybe the listener, if they haven't seen It's a Wonderful Life, we might want to tell
him
or her...
Them
is the appropriate pronoun. The film is about George Bailey, who and the film takes his life from being a relative, you know, a kid in this small American town, Bedford Falls, and it takes you up to the point at which he's running the family buildings and loans, a kind of building society.
Yeah. There's essentially a building society.
It's a building society, and he's helped people all the way through his life, and the building and loans company itself has helped lots of people get homes that otherwise would not have been able to do so. And then there's a crisis just at Christmas when he's got his happy family around him, loving wife, but all this money goes missing, which throws into crisis the building and loans, and it looks like it's going to be bankrupt and the whole thing's going to collapse. And he decides that his whole life on the base of this is worthless, and he wants to kill himself. Yeah. He's let everybody down, and he's better as if he's never lived.
I mean, it is worth mentioning that he is frustrated in his actual ambitions throughout his life. I mean, what the one thing, George Bailey, that we know about him from a young boy is that he wants to go away, he wants to become a big architect or city planner, he wants to travel the world... And every time this is about to happen, something frustrates it, and George Bailey stays in Bedford Falls and becomes the ultimate Bedford Falls man.
Yes, and without him, this is the point of the film when he is thinking about committing suicide, an angel comes down and prevents him from killing himself. And Bailey says, well, I wish I'd never lived. You know, I don't know why you saved me. I wish I'd never lived. And he is shown what Bedford Falls would have been like had he never lived. And the contributions that he made to the lives of all kinds of people is taken out.
Mm.
And what Capra shows is that this lovely, idyllic, small American town, and Capra was a small town America guy. He idealised not the cities of America, but small towns of America. This small town was completely overwhelmed by commercialism, bars, drinking, gambling, crime, and has been, and that's largely because it's owned lock, stock and barrel by Potter, who is the nemesis of George Bailey and George Bailey's father, who are the good guys, as you might have gathered from what I've just been saying, who want to look after people's interests, who are in business, and yet they're not really in business. That their priority isn't money, but it's to help people. They use the building and loans to enable people to get decent homes. And Potter is the high, you know, the high capitalist.
Yeah.
He wants to own everything. He almost does own everything. But Bailey is the thing that stops Potter running rampant. But without Bailey, Potter just takes over. And it's capitalism without any kind of restraint.
Yeah.
That's what happens when Bailey looks back and his life has been taken out of Bedford Falls.
Yeah, I mean, in many ways, sort of Potter represents corporate capitalism. The sort of almost faceless. He's, completely unrestrained, rampant. But it's not, I mean, the building alone isn't socialism. It's not as clear-cut as socialism versus capitalism. It's more sort of different versions of capitalism. And I wouldn't say Capra wasn't particularly socialist, as I understand it.
Capra was a Republican.
Yeah.
But he co-wrote things with someone who was on the left.
Mm.
So there was a kind of tension in some of the writing. But essentially, Capra was a small town, small business, mom and pop kind of idea of this is what capitalism should be. We should all be helping each other, making some money, but helping each other. And his nemesis was the big city and the big corporate.
So it's very much Main Street versus Wall Street.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's very, so this kind of populism that Capra expresses through its wonderful life, which actually runs through almost all of his films. It's a very consistent message. And interestingly enough, made him an extremely popular film director in the late 30s and into the 1940s. It's a message which Ayn Rand, who the great, I don't know how you would describe her, but the high priestess of neoliberalism, she hated It's a Wonderful Life. She saw it as un-American. And yet Capra, who was first generation Sicilian immigrant, he thought of himself as the quintessential American. He was as patriotic as you could possibly be, and yet those on the right of his own days and subsequently would see this as an appalling, an appalling piece of almost socialistic. I mean, they would see it as probably almost socialistic.
Well, I mean, if you look at the tax bill that's just gone through the Senate, I mean, it's about as anti-Capra as you can get. It's, it's small business, middle class America suffers at the hands of corporate America. They should have named it the Potter Bill.
Yeah. So it's kind of an interesting reminder that America is not defined by capitalism, unrestrained capitalism.
Yep.
There are different visions of America, and they're not. And it's not really a question of either Trump or Sanders. There is this kind of middle America, kind of self-help, collective self-help, but within capitalism. It's a different idea of what capitalism could be, of course. And some people would say, well, this is all just completely idealised rubbish. It's wish fulfilment. It's never really going to happen. But that doesn't mean that we should ignore that kind of a vision is part of the American dream. There are different kinds of American dreams.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, what's interesting to me is, you watch the film, I watch the film, and I come from, I'm a city girl. I love New York. But New York is almost the other bad guy in this. It takes everybody away. Sam Wainwright, who is George's successful friend, success goes off and lives in New York and loses touch with Bedford Falls. And that's quite a motif of the film. And I watch it and I'm like, oh, I want to live there. I mean, I don't want to live there at all. But in the for the, you know, 2 hours and 10 minutes of that I'm watching the film, Bedford Falls is the ideal. And it's absolutely sold to me as that.
But you're right, though. You're right, though, that George is constantly, from being a young boy, is constantly wanting to leave Bedford Falls. He wants to go around the world. He wants to become this great architect. He wants to build big things, but outside of Bedford Falls. But he's constantly drawn back. And so I think what Capra is doing is showing, you know, there are frustrations in small town America. Mm-hmm. And when he loses it, when the money goes and he basically decides his whole world has really been worthless, he's wasted his time. And he has a real go at, I mean, he's got a big family. They're all these lovely, loving children. But he's shown the frustrations of being part of, you know, the father in the big family. And he really has a go at them. It's quite disturbing and quite nasty, actually.
Yeah, I mean, George Bailey is a good guy, but he's not necessarily always a nice guy.
No, it's certainly in that moment when he becomes completely self. He just feels sorry for himself.
And he's horrible to Zuzu's teacher, his daughter's teacher.
Yes, though he does get hit on the face, doesn't he?
He does,
as a reward for that.
Yeah, Pat Capra is very much sticking up for the public servant there.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of good that there is that sort of subtlety or paradox, because without that, I mean, George Bailey, who's played by James Stewart, who played the other Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, the other great Capra character, isn't a saint. Yep. I mean, if he was a saint, you go.
It would be very boring.
It would be very boring, but it's at least relatable in some ways. In some ways, but there is a sort of central irony or a paradox at the very end of the film, because basically Capra is saying there is a distinction between Potter, who is all about profit.
Yep.
He doesn't care about people, whereas Bailey. Profit is something, you know, that's a secondary consideration. He wants the building and loans to help people get homes, decent, affordable homes. So it's human beings versus profit. And yet, at the end of the film, what happens is that although this money all goes missing, it's actually stolen by Potter. All the people that Bailey has helped contribute money.
Yes.
So it's a film which it goes against the idea that everything has to be about profit and money, and yet Bailey is saved through money, through people's contribution of money.
I think it's a slight paradox there. I suppose so. I mean, I think for me, it's not a paradox if what you're doing is arguing about two different visions of capitalism. It's a paradox if what you would be arguing is that capitalism is bad.
Yeah.
What happens at the end is collectivism, I suppose.
It is collectivism. Yeah. And there's a wonderful scene which, because it basically Bailey grows up during the 1920s and the 1930s. Mm. And by the time of the Wall Street crash, when all the banks are sort of collapsing, he's in charge of the building and loan. He's about to go away on his honeymoon. But then they see everyone's queuing up outside the building alone and the big bank in town. I said, what's going on? So he discovers that all the people that have put their money into the building and loan want all their money back. And he actually describes to them what, in fact, the building society, in our terms, what it's about. It's about putting your money, what you're doing is you're lending to other people.
Yeah.
To the people, you're helping everybody else, as well as yourself, get the homes that you want. If you withdraw everything that you've got in here, you're going to hurt everybody else. So while one guy wants all of his money and he gets it, everybody else is persuaded by him that actually they don't need to take everything. There's something called a collective interest, although it wouldn't be called a collective interest in that film. It wouldn't be an American term. But it is a collective interest. And that you can have that within capitalism. It doesn't have to be socialism. Yeah. But it's something which is more, it shows that there's more to capitalism than profit.
Yeah. And I think that that's probably best exemplified in the scene where Potter, having been largely beaten back, certainly held back by George, decides if you can't beat him, employ him, and offers George a job, and I think we should listen to that now.
Well, what's your point, Mr. Potter?
My point is I want to hire you.
Hire me?
Well, I want you to manage my affairs, run my properties. George, I'll start you out at $20,000 a year.
$20,000 a year?
You wouldn't mind living in the nicest house in town, buying your wife a lot of fine clothes, a couple of business trips to New York a year, maybe once in a while Europe. You wouldn't mind that, would you, Jones?
Would I? You're not talking to somebody else around here, are you? You know, this is me. You remember me? George Bailey.
George Bailey. George Bailey, whose ship has just come in. Provided he has enough brains to climb aboard.
Holy mackerel. Well, how about the building and loan?
Oh, confounded man, are you afraid of success? I'm offering you a 3 years contract at $20,000 a year starting today. Is it a deal or isn't it?
Well, Mr. Plunter, I know I ought to jump at the chance, but I wonder if it'd be possible for you to give me 24 hours to think it over.
Sure. You go on home and talk about it to your wife.
I'd like to do that.
Yeah, then in the meantime, I'll draw up the papers.
All right, sir.
Okay, George.
Okay, Mr. Plunter. Wait a minute here. Wait a minute. I don't need 24 hours. I don't have to talk to anybody. I know right now, and the answer's no, no! Doggone it. You sit around here and you spin your little webs and you think the whole world revolves around you and your money. Well, it doesn't, Mr. Potter. In the whole vast configuration of things, I'd say you were nothing but a scurvy little spider. And that goes for you, too.
And one of the interesting things about that is that Capra, who was he was a big devout Catholic, and some people have detected in some of his other films, like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, Meet John Doe, and others.
Is Harvey a Capra film? I can't remember if it is. It's a Jimmy Stewart film. But
it's
I
a Jimmy. Yeah, it's a James
Capra.
Stewart. It's
feels
James Stewart.
Very Capra.
Yes. Well, there were Capra-esque themes. Yeah. In all kinds of films at this point in time, because he was such an influential director. But many people have detected a kind of a Christ-like figure in many of these films. And we've already said Bailey was not perfect. But then again, Jesus wasn't perfect.
Yeah.
Jesus kept having moments of thinking, and of course he has that moment when the devil tempts him. And this is effectively what Potter is doing.
Yeah, of course.
He's tempting Bailey. And like our Lord and Saviour, Jesus Christ, Judge Bailey...
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
We're saying Merry Christmas again.
Judge Bailey realises at that last moment that this is just not for him. That's a really, really interesting scene for all kinds of many ways.
And how does the family of George Bailey are quite interesting. They're very lower middle class.
Did you think that?
Yeah.
I can never really tell in these kind of Hollywood films.
They run a boarding house. The house is a boarding house.
Right, all right.
And although they have a servant,
Yes.
Rather than...
A black servant.
Who they seem to have a sort of quite nice relationship with. I mean, it's all very... honestly, Gov, it's all fine, everyone gets on. Kind of a relationship.
Yep.
And she is one of the people who gives money at the end of the film.
Well, Capra, although he played the game, you know, in terms of Hollywood, all of his stars were, of course, white and everything. If you watch closely, and you really do have to watch slightly closely, there are black characters in the background in with the white characters in most of his films.
Oh, right.
Nothing very much is made of it. But the character of the maid, they have a very, you know,
Annie.
Annie, it's very friendly. Mm. There's no hierarchy. No. She's part of the family. I mean, maybe some people might say, well, yeah, but she's a maid and they, you know. But nonetheless, it's a human set of relationships.
What was interesting about the fact that they made that a boarding house is that they made the place where the maid works a place of work.
Mm.
Which I thought was quite an interesting choice, because that does sort of slightly more justify having a servant in that way.
Yes.
There's
also the immigrant theme that comes out a little bit in the film. Because as I say, Capra was, he came over with his family to California at the turn of the 20th century when he's about six, something like that. So he was an immigrant. And the film makes it clear about the help that Bailey gives to the Martini family, these Italian, or maybe they were Sicilians, immigrant family. And that is pointed that this building and loans company allows them to get the home, you know, because they're hardworking.
Yeah.
You know, it allows them to actually achieve that which they want. And when Potter is having an attack on Bailey and saying, you know, all you're doing is you're helping these people to be lazy, good for nothing, you know, they're not being thrifty. You're by helping them get these homes on cheap terms, you're undermining their thriftiness.
Yeah.
Very familiar. But also during that speech, he talks about him helping garlic eaters.
Mm.
So again, you know, you have to listen quite carefully. But Capra, for his day, was relatively progressive and made sure that those points were made.
Yeah. And I mean, what's really interesting in the sort of alternative universe where George Bailey doesn't exist, Martino's bar becomes Nick's bar. And Nick is, you know, classic American working class, and is horrible. I mean, the bar is transformed from a nice place where you would go for one or two to a hard liquor drinking den that is nobody goes to be pleasant.
Yeah, well, I think Nick actually describes it as a place where men come to get drunk.
Yes.
I mean, as bluntly as that. And it's all about money. Everything in Bedford Falls, which I think is now called Pottersville,
yeah.
It's been renamed because it's been taken over by Potter. Everything is about money. And and as a consequence of that, everything is about drink, everything is about sex,
debauchery.
Everything is about gambling.
Yeah.
Everything is about all the sins you could possibly think of.
And the building alone becomes a strip club.
Yes, for want of a better word.
Essentially. I mean, I suppose it would be a burlesque club, probably.
Yes, I think that's probably how it was described. But effectively, that's what it was, yeah.
The town floozy, who is the town floozy in both versions?
Gloria Graham.
She's wonderful.
She is. But she's very sweet.
She's a lovely floozy in real life.
Yes.
Real life. Yeah. If our listeners want to know, I did air quotes at that point.
Yes.
In the George Bailey's normal reality, she's sort of an idealised floozy. Mary Magdalene, if you will. But in Pottersville... Because there's no George to be nice to her and to steer her on a slightly better path, she's arrested and she's in terrible trouble.
Yeah, because the only relationships in Pottersville are ones defined by money, by cash.
Yeah.
So, of course, everyone is only interested in money, and so everything is measured by money. So that it kind of, you know, shows up that Capra's enemy is the big city. Because it's like a little bit of New York, a parody of maybe, you know, what Times Square might have been like in the 1940s, but in a small town. And whether, you know, people have said, you know, well, what, this is all very nice, this is all very well and good, but does he actually have a vision that is a sustainable vision? You know, is it something that, if it's all going to be based around the goodwill of decent people, well, that's no political project. What political project can be based on the goodwill of decent people? What's the agency? But I guess he would come back and say, well, if people aren't going to be decent to each other, there aren't going to be individuals who are going to do this. Well, nothing's ever going to happen.
And I
do think of his films, and certainly like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, Meet John Doe, which is a really good film, and also It's a Wonderful Life. They are messages. I mean, he is trying to communicate messages to his audience. Which, you know, we might think, well, he didn't get very far, did he? But they are, I think they are to be, they're comedies. And, you know, this film's got an angel. So, of course, it can't be taken entirely seriously. But I think fundamentally he did have a very clear vision about America, and he wasn't a socialist. He was relatively right wing, even in American terms at that point. But it's really an interesting alternative view. This is what I've said before: an alternative view of what to be an American could be.
Yeah.
It isn't Donald Trump.
Nor is it Bernie Sanders. No, you get the sense that Capra would be a never-Trumper Republican, yes, rather than a Saunders Democrat.
Yes. Yeah, I would imagine he probably would have been quite happy to support Ronald Reagan, who, by the way, apparently sometimes confused himself when he was president with a character in a Frank Capra movie. Because the Capra-esque vision is... I mean, I think a lot of Americans are aware of it, mm, and they like it.
Mm.
It's how they would like to think of themselves.
Yeah.
I don't think Donald Trump would. I mean, he is Potter.
He is Potter.
Yes.
Watching it last night, the parallels were extraordinary to current times. As some of our listeners will know, I'm currently doing an MA, and I'm writing an essay about Watergate. And the parallels from that of current times are extraordinary. It does feel like we've forgotten too much of our history. We've forgotten these wonderful lessons that have been written down for us by people like Frank Capra. So we are doomed to repeat our mistakes.
those that forget history are doomed to repeat. You're absolutely right. I mean, this is what we have today is part of a conversation that Americans, as well as ourselves, of course, have been having about how should we best organise our society.
Mm.
And it isn't necessarily as polarised as maybe some people might imagine it to be. Most people are not full-blown capitalists. Most people are not full-blown socialists.
Yeah.
They're about how do we make the life that we have got livable and more human. What are the agencies of doing it? Now, like I say, unfortunately, Capra's vision is really based around nice people being decent. But within it, it is also, as the speech that Bailey makes when the buildings and the loan is seemingly about to collapse, when he actually does a speech that everybody is interconnected,
and we need
to help ourselves because nobody else is going to help us.
And I mean, yeah, you can call it idealistic if you like, but I bank with the Nationwide for exactly the reason that it's a building society. And if the Nationwide would like to sponsor the podcast, they're more than welcome because I'm a very happy customer.
And is it still a building society?
Yes, it's the one that still is.
The reason
I put my money into it is because I thought it was after the crash, I thought I want my money somewhere much safer, that has much better oversight and that is not just rapacious capitalism.
Yes, yes.
I don't think I've ever made a better... I mean, I don't make many financial decisions. I don't have that kind of money. But it is part of an ethos that does exist, that people do make work. I'm not just doing an advert for Nationwide. You know, there are reasons that cooperative societies are currently flourishing.
Mm.
Even though the co-op itself has had certain issues over the last few years. But actual cooperatives are very much part of this new 21st century approach to trying to combat rapacious capitalism.
Community banks and things like that. Yes, obviously it's all a bit on the minority side. I mean, the power is with those because of legislation.
Yep.
We allow, you know, politicians allow these things to be as they are because we allow these things to be as they are. We are part of the problem. We're also part of the solution. And I suspect, you know, if Capra was with us now, that would be maybe the thing that he would say. I mean, there's the film Mr. Smith Goes to Washington is all about people taking responsibility for politics.
Yeah.
Meet John Doe is about people coming together in these John Doe clubs to basically run politics. So I think he has this kind of idea within his films. It's expressed in slightly different ways in slightly different films. That is something that maybe is possible and necessary if capitalism is to be made more humane. Because he is a capitalist. He believes in making money, but money which is tempered by humanity.
Yeah.
And that is something which, I guess, left to its own devices, capitalism finds difficult.
Yeah.
Which is why, I guess, sometimes they need Labour governments to come in and try to temper things. But anyway, that's the only bit of direct politics that I want to draw from it. It's a great film. It it's kind of almost it's almost a bit sad that it's been confused as being an exclusively Christmas film. It's a film that takes place at the end.
Well, this is the debate about what is a Christmas film. Yeah, right. I mean, do films that take place at Christmas,
yes,
are they Christmas films, or do you have to have Santa Claus or Jesus or one of the big Christmas guys?
Yeah, because Jesus is not mentioned explicitly at all in this. It's not at all religious. It's really a film. It's a debate about what kind of capitalism do we want? What kind of society do we want within capitalism? And I think if people watch it at Christmas, thinking it's going to be a Christmas film, they're going to be a bit disappointed and, as I say, a bit disturbed by the fact that it ends with the possible suicide of the central character, who ends up crying and, you know, he's broken down. This is quite disturbing, but it's a happy ending. But it's not, I wouldn't say that it was a feel-good film. It was a thinking film more than anything else.
Oh, see, I cried at the end, so...
You can cry and think. Emotions and reason, they do
they're
come
not,
together.
They're not
binaries, no.
I mean, I it's a lovely film. It's also responsible for my own Christmas ritual, which is Christmas movie night, where a couple of friends of mine and I get together every year and watch a Christmas film that one of us haven't seen. And that's because my friends John and Helen hadn't seen It's a Wonderful Life, so I was like, right, get round my house.
But if it's something that people watch and they like, and I'm sure, you know, there'd be many opportunities to watch it, if it's free, on Amazon or somewhere.
Don't save it for Christmas.
No, don't say. But if you like it, then I would certainly recommend Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Oh yeah.
And Meet John Doe, which has been is slightly overlooked, but is also deals with these kinds of themes about big business, media being owned by big business, manipulating how people think, and manipulating democracy. In fact, Meet John Doe is a film to be talked about at some later date.
Absolutely. I've not seen it, so that would be a fantastic future podcast.
Okay.
Brilliant. Well, I think that's probably where we'll leave it. It's a Wonderful Life is for life, not just for Christmas. And on that note, Merry Christmas to all our listeners. Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas, yes.
If you've liked this, the best Christmas present that you could give us is to rate and review us on iTunes. And with that note, we shall leave you and say Merry Christmas. And this has been a Political Human production. Thank you.